PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
All right, we are live. Well, at least when we recorded this. But welcome to episode 8 of Off Course on the THP Golf Radio Network. I'm Rob Miller on social Rob Miller Time. Joining me, as always, is Dan Edwards, my co-host. Canadan Golf, pretty much everywhere. Unless you add a bizarre 82 at the end somewhere, but you can find him out there. Is that correct, Dan?
Yeah, man. Depending on where you want to find me, I like to debate on Twitter nowadays. So Canadan Golf on Twitter. And not unlike Johnny Five, I am live today. So let's get it.
Johnny Five. Quick reminder to follow Range Days, which Dan is a part of, on THP Radio Network, and also our friend Adam at Golf Unfiltered. Number one thing you need to do today, there's only one assignment for everyone, and that is click the subscribe button to whatever you're listening on. Wherever you are, please click subscribe. So you can also follow us on social media at Off Course THP on both Instagram and Twitter. And this week we're going to lead off. We're going to go right into it because, quite frankly, we pretty much forgot last week. We're doing a big giveaway, a $500 giveaway, not actual dollars, but it's the prizes are going to be worth about $500 for one lucky social media follower. What you have to do, very simple, on Twitter, Off Course THP, one word, just follow us and retweet this podcast. On Instagram, tag a friend, and of course, follow us. And then we'll let that run a couple of weeks or so. And then we're going to do a random drawing and giveaway. You can win up to a $500 prize pack from the Hackers Paradise.
The infamous THP prize packs, which are always absolutely incredible. I believe at one time or another, they actually, one of them had a golf speaker in it. What do you think about that?
That's one thing I don't have, and I wish I had it. I have a friend, Dave Cordero, who's at PGA Tour Communications now, but back in the day, he was at TaylorMade, and we would listen to music. This was like, you know, 8 years ago. That's like unheard of in the stuffy world of golf, isn't it?
You're so dated.
I am so dated.
So
in the days when I had to, you should have seen how I got that feathery around the course, man.
Okay. So a terrible attempt at a lead into our first topic, which generally has an unbelievable amount of disdain or appreciation on the golf course. And that is whether you are willing to listen to music while you play and or how loud it should be. Rob, what's it like on the East Coast playing with those guys?
I think overall East Coast, I've played East Coast and West Coast, and I think East Coast, it's definitely not the norm for sure. Music is played, I'd say, occasionally at best. What about the Heartland?
The Heartland? Am I in the Heartland?
To me, you are. You're in like Pennsylvania, so.
Pennsylvania, the tri-state. One version of the tri-state. Yeah, I don't know. It's a mixed bag. It especially like morning rounds, not typically something you'd hear much of. Once you start getting into those noon tee times or those afternoon rounds, especially the E9s or E18s, you start to get the tunes going, man. You add some liquid courage and some tunes and just let it rip.
Yeah. So are you a tune guy? You have a speaker or do you rely on the phone or what?
I do have a speaker. And actually the last two times I played, I definitely don't do it when I walk, but when I have a cart, I'll have the speaker in the cart. And the last two times I had it with me and didn't play it, for whatever reason, but I have no problems with music on the golf course. The biggest problem I have is playing to your audience, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. It has something everybody can enjoy, that type of thing.
Yeah. So, for example, if I'm rolling with the boys, AKA the guys around my age, none of us care, and some of us actually enjoy it. So you play whatever, you know, the typical my age music at volumes that are reasonable. But I play with a lot of older gentlemen as well. And they are not as keen to hear, you know, Chevelle blitzing off my speakers. So
yeah, they don't like that quite as much.
I might be able to get away with some Tragically Hip with them, but
get that and forget it.
So Rob, I remember a couple of years ago we were at an event, and it wasn't our golf course, which I think is also another story, a conversation to be had, the flexibility you might have playing at home versus playing away. And we were familiar with the group a couple holes ahead. And as we crossed one fairway, they were coming up the other fairway, just absolutely blasting like 90s, early to mid 90s rap, blasting it out of their speaker. I'm like, you know, good for them. But I think volume is one of the most critical elements of playing music on the golf course.
So was that, is it a private club?
No, it's open to public play. You have to pay pretty good money for it, but it is open to public play.
Yeah, that, I mean, you can understand how that would be distracting for someone, especially because golf, you're normally playing in total silence, excuse me. So I could see where that was a problem. I definitely, the home versus away argument, you know, we always say, like, to our kids, read your room. You know, you have to understand, like you were saying, who you're with and then where you are, because you don't want to be that guy. Come on. You know, that's not what you're supposed to do. It's not like you need the music to play better. Some people, I'm sure, will argue that, and that's fun. Whatever gets you through the day, you know, that's cool. But I think I would never go to someone's club and play my music. You know, said, hey, you want to play some music? But they say play music. You're like, yeah. You basically, hey, if you're his guest or her guest, and they want to play music, you let it go. But I don't have a speaker. It's not premeditated for me whether music comes on or not. So if I had a speaker, I guess I obviously I would do it more. But the iPhone 11 is pretty damn good as far as music quality is concerned, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how much better a speaker is. But let you live in that world, Rob. And I want to say, I think it's critical to play to your audience. I think out of everyone I've talked to about this conversation, and this is from ages 20 to 70, the most consistent message I've gotten back is that people either want to respect or expect to be respected, that if they don't want to listen to your music, all they need to do is walk 10 to 20 feet away from you. And with that regard, you can enjoy music on the golf course without blaring in. I mean, this is a golf course. It's not exactly a loud location. If you want to sit in your cart and enjoy some music, that's great. But do you need to force the other guys? If your cart is parked by the green, do you need your green and the adjacent tee box to hear your music perfectly clear? I think the answer is no.
No, for sure. That's not good. My foursome, now that I think about it, has stopped in the last 2 years because everybody walks. And I think it's the guys that had speakers would carry. So they're not going to lug that thing around, and there's no good place to kind of put it. So they would rather pack the bag with beers than pack it with the amp caddy or whatever it may be.
I thought you were going to tell me the music on the golf course was a fad that was dying out. I thought that's where you're going with that.
I don't think it's taken over, but I think it's here to stay. Once you start marketing products for it, any product, it seems like every product stays around unless it's like some sort of swing device, you know, something that will actually help your golf game. No, those die out, you know?
Yeah. So if someone came up to you, Rob, and said, hey, we're listening to music today, and you basically say, yeah, no worries. And then they say, what do you want to listen to? What's your answer?
I prefer rock over everything. Just playing guitar and everything, that's what I like to listen to as well. But, you know, a friend of mine, he plays the Dead all the time. I'm not a Dead fan. It kind of like becomes white noise to me, you know. It's like dee 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 dee. Just
yeah. I don't know. Jam band, yeah.
No offense, I'm just not a jam band guy. It's fine. It just winds up blending together. So I listen to plenty of different things that people won't. I don't think I'll be bothered by anything that they put on, you know, because I like music in general. If you're gonna go today's pop, there I'm going to have a little bit of a problem, but I haven't encountered that too much. What about you? I mean, Tragically Hip, we can agree that, yeah, put that on, but you could also put on metal and I'm cool with that too, but you can't play your tour tempo out loud. Can't do that.
Yeah. I think, there's not a lot that I wouldn't listen to on a golf course. I think for me, it's more about comfort of the people around me. So I want to make sure that something's on that all four of us can agree on, should they be around that music. And that's not a point of saying that I'm staunchy about that. The point is that I want to make sure everyone's having the best time they can. I do have a funny story about music though. And oftentimes this comes with scramble golf.
All right,
you have four guys just chilling, having a good time, laughing it up. So I have a group of guys locally here that we do a lot of scrambles together. Well, they haven't invited me back in a while, so maybe they're mad at me, but could have something to do with what's going on in the world too. So last year we're playing in the scramble and I could sense the emotions of the crowd. So I've got like some upbeat music going on. You know, we're trying to make some birdies. It's not really happening. And there's just happened to be this one song on that was just building and building and building. And you knew the drop was coming at some point. And one of our guys goes to the very top of his swing. And right before he pulls the trigger, the music of the song changes completely. And he just ducks it so hard. And we all busted out laughing. It's like, you know, most of the time music's like really balanced, it's no big deal.
Yeah,
a big random change or a song changes, it's totally different, man, that can really get in someone's head.
Yeah, if you've got like you know, the beginning of One by Metallica playing while you're putting, that's cool. Probably not the end. It's not gonna help you out a little bit. It's funny because you know I tried that tour tempo years ago and you know, I think it does creep into your thoughts, you know, you definitely can swing along with the tempo of the music or the sound or something. You don't want to go, you know, you don't want to turn this into a Peloton class.
Yeah. Well, at the time I definitely didn't apologize for it. I was too busy laughing and it sets the mood so well, because in a scramble, you have four chances to do one thing right. Yeah, so
I
fortunately it didn't dictate that hole for us.
Yeah, sometimes it's better. Sometimes you get the right guy to mess up a tee shot. It's just awesome. You know what I mean? Like if it's the right person at the right time, you have to kind of laugh at it, man. There's you know, I have a friend of mine that he will always once around confuse his 9-iron with his 6-iron. And he will go up there on a par 3 and he's like bending over, like, and you know, it's like 165 yards and he's really hunched over and he'll hit it and it comes up, you know, like 30 yards short. And then he's like, oh, I got a 9-iron. Like, he noticed it standing over the damn club. And it's like, it's the funniest thing in the world. He's the same guy that will mess up his tee shot and then take four practice swings after.
I was about to say, he doesn't sound like a ready golfer to me.
No, and then there's philosophy that comes next. He's got a whole 12-step program going on. Like once the shot has occurred, it's really quite amazing.
Oh man, that's tough. I don't know about that, Rob.
It's a difficult day, trust me, but you have, so, you know, you've got this pent up, you're ready to laugh, you're ready to find the time.
So I'm kind of curious to see what other people think about this. Obviously we have a good basis here of what our opinions are. And again, we come from two different parts of the country. So the collective opinion around us is likely a little bit different, but you know, for our listeners out there, I would love to hear your take. I actually started a thread on the THB community forums, Rob, and it about an hour ago, and it's already got a whole bunch of responses on one of the topics we have today. So we might have to really dial up the music conversation here in the next couple of days and see if we can get that conversation going as well, because I'm genuinely curious, especially from a state perspective, not just not just an individual perspective, what music represents in the game of golf right now.
Yeah, I think out on the West, the Cali golf I've played more with music than without. Like it's just more laid back, you know, type of thing. So lots of shorts, man.
Just, yeah,
Watch
shorts
out.
And Red Hot Chili Peppers and what do they have? infused lemonades over there. Blueberry infused lemonades.
There you
Shout
go.
Out to the West Coast.
It's a magical place.
What else do you want to talk about today, Rob?
Well, I think next there was an equipment release. I think it was the first peak today, right? Odyssey triple track number 7 has come out. So I think there's triple track everywhere.
It's a very fresh look.
It looks fantastic. It's not my type of putter, and I know it's super popular. But that's it. You know, play the putter that you play best with. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, that's been copied like crazy. So it looks really nice. I like it.
It is one of the most polarizing putter shapes in the industry for sure. One that has been duplicated, as you mentioned, many times. And now we are seeing it with a new technology they've been utilizing over the last year or two called triple track, which requires a lot more than just putting the putter down and taking a stroke at the ball.
This is an old Billy Baru.
It's not a lot of toe hanging this bad boy. But Rob, I want to get your take on the amount of time it takes to putt. And as we see all these products, and I'm sure you can name a few off the top of your head, all these products that have alignment as a critical component in the art of putting, if you will.
Well, I think it's funny, first of all, that I think this putter and other triple tracks are pretty much flying off the shelves. I mean, Odyssey pretty much owns the market in every market they're in. I don't know if it's 65 different markets around the world or something like that. It was like that a while ago. But I believe that it's like everything they put out, it winds up, turning to gold, so to speak. So people like the alignment. I mean, we've seen the two balls in the past. Those are gone pretty much, which is pretty amazing. They had Versa and so forth for alignment, and everybody likes that type of alignment. Yet when someone gets a custom putter made, they only want a sight dot. Like, what's up with that? Have you ever noticed that? Like, oh yeah, I'd love that if they only had a sight dot on it. Well, no sight dot.
Yeah, you go naked with make sure the neck is welded, and then you've clearly made a statement that your putter is very custom.
Yes, exactly. I mean, they're like that everywhere. But it's just kind of funny. I don't know when you can afford a custom putter, does that mean you can putt now? Or is there, I don't know. It's like chicken or the egg argument there. But
yeah. But I know there are people out there who are absolutely staunch about mallets versus blades, but I think alignment is a much more personal thing, as it should be. It has a lot to do with eye dominance and what works. And actually, I was out at TaylorMade, I think it was last year or the year before that, and they had mentioned DJ coming in and showing variances in his results on their system with putters that had the only difference on the head was the style of alignment aid on top of it. And there was a very clear winner between the two. So, I mean, it's not just a little bit of lunacy here. It is valuable for each individual. So I do like that. And to your comment about sight dots, I hope that people are actually getting fit for those before they, put the money into a custom.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't happen. I will say that I've done two putter fittings. And one was basically whether I should be left hand low or not. And I strike the ball better left hand low. Like if you just look at science, right? But I don't think I putt better left hand low. So there's a whole thread going on THP this week about that. And I think it becomes a little too robotic for me. And you kind of lose I kind of lost my feel and have the creativity there.
Are you a right handed pointer finger down the putter grip kind of guy?
No, I don't do the pointer finger.
Just thing. Basic grip it and rip it.
I don't think about rocking shoulders or anything like that. Who's a good example of that? Stricker, good example of that, right? I think
Stricker playing the toe down.
Yeah, it shows you that you can. There's a lot of different ways to make putts. I think you have to figure out what works for you and then just kind of run with it. And if you have to change, I mean, for a time there, I'd go left hand low for lag putts and I just flip it around for the tap-ins and so forth. You know, it's some
just kind of like Spieth looking at the hole versus not looking at the hole.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that. That's, I mean, have you ever heard of someone aside of someone holding a lightsaber being able to like see their target without really like looking at it? Well, not target, but the thing that you're striking.
I don't know, man.
I can't get into that.
We have successfully gone off course while staying on topic, which is kind of hilarious to me.
We have.
That, because the basis of this conversation was intended to be these, for lack of a better word, extreme alignment elements that are now being utilized on putters, Rob.
Well, I think we're not at the point where Detour's coming back, but you're right. This triple track is everywhere. I think triple track on your ball and your putter, that can be considered overkill.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
So for the longest time, I've seen guys use everything. Plus sign on a golf ball, a full line on the golf ball. I prefer to putt completely empty, void of anything on the ball. That's just my preference because I get too wrapped up in the line. But for those who are somehow unfamiliar with triple track, what it is a three-line system that's kind of like a plane landing on a runway where you have that central line and you're measuring up the alignment that you're supposed to be creating. Now, it originally started on golf balls and they've brought it over to some of their putters. And in this case, they brought it to their extremely popular number 7. And what that requires is lining up the ball perfectly towards the target that you're trying to putt at. And what this does is it adds an additional extension or an extension to that line so that you're now lining your putter head up with your ball. So when we had talked before the show, Rob, we discussed, is this one of those things that's going to increase the amount of time that's being taken to putt a ball? But as I'm talking about it, as I'm thinking about it, we've got guys who have used these alignment elements for forever. And is this just kind of, you know, their wheelhouse? Is this what we're going to see them gravitate towards, those guys using plus signs on their balls?
I don't know. That's you mentioned you don't have any of those ball marking doodads anymore.
A great friend in Canada bought me a 3-stripe one. I was going to try and create my own version of the triple track and didn't have much success doing it. They were very squiggly lines and I almost felt drunk trying to putt. Yeah,
it's not easy to put that on there. You're better off like grabbing like, what is it? A tin cup and putting a little symbol. If you want to mark your ball that way, mm-hmm. I've gone through parts, times where I've used the, I've put an alignment mark on there, just essentially a line somewhere, but I don't bother with that anymore. I like to use, the label or the ball, the ball type, like say that what's on a like a Pro V as my alignment. I do use it for that, but I don't specifically put something down on my ball. I don't think I need it. I do like the triple track pattern. It reminds me of like a drinking straw, like the plastic drinking straws that we can't use anymore.
Okay.
Like little lines. That's what I thought of when I first saw it.
Oh man. Yeah, I don't know. After looking at it and talking through it, I think my perception has changed a little bit. I don't think this is going to slow down play. I think this is just going to add those seriously alignment focused individuals have just another element to incorporate into their stroke. Because once their ball is aligned and they were going to do that anyway, it's not that hard to align a putter up to a ball unless they keep modifying it. And then we're going to start talking about that 3-minute rule.
yeah. I mean, honestly, I can't see how it wouldn't take a little bit longer because, I mean, if you have to align two things together, shouldn't that take longer than not aligning at all?
I don't think so, man. Because once the ball's aligned, aligning the putter head is not that hard, right? It shouldn't be. I should be clear now. It shouldn't be that hard.
It shouldn't be that hard. Well, yeah, it shouldn't be, but I don't know. I guess if it, whatever floats your boat there, I don't care if you need a mega alignment for these. We call them BAM putters, these big ass mallets.
BAM putters.
Because they're huge. They're just, that's how you get forgiveness in a putter. Cause more people, you know, you don't realize how off center you will, you can actually strike a putt. Now, I realize how off center I get. Most people, I think they don't.
Well, it's club champion action. Get that Sam putt lab to tell you how good or bad you are. What we haven't really talked about yet, Rob, is I think their execution on this number seven shape is really good. Now, we've seen some triple track that's gone down a little bit lower on the head. They've managed to keep this above, which is sort of a difficult concept to do with the shape that the number seven is in. And I think that's going to play a pretty big role in the success of the line. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, number one, I think it needs to be, I think you'll get people that who would buy this putter and not even notice that it has triple track technology. Like, they know there's something on it, but they don't realize that, hey, this is on there specifically, and we have this on a ball as well, type of thing. Like, it's that good looking, you know what I mean?
And yeah,
I think that's important, because something like Truvis, I know, I don't know what the stats are out there, like 75% of people that try it stick with it, you know, but Truvis is a polarizing thing. It's just, you either like to have your golf ball look like a tiny soccer ball or you don't.
It's fun to watch them putt, but then again, so it's fun to watch picks putt too. And there's a much, much bigger criticism out there for those. So
is it as fun? Come on.
I mean, I don't do it that often, so I can't really say I have a strong opinion one way or the other. I'm a Bridgestone guy through and through.
Yeah, the first picks looked like little like comic book explosions to me, you know.
Well, there's a story there, and you know, that's as long as they're trying and it's not just basic nonsensical hype, I appreciate the idea. If it's going to get other people playing it and experiencing other balls, I think that's the one thing that we're not really considering here is you have a chance to pull people away from a ball or a manufacturer that's pretty much dominated the market for years and years for no other reason other than it is the ball, right? So now people are going to other balls and saying, hey, this one, I like the way it looks, but it also works a little bit better for me. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think first impressions are the biggest impressions. So if you play well with that, you'll probably stick with it. I mean, putting Truvis on Chrome Soft was a brilliant idea that probably internally they were like, what? You know, whoever came up to him. And then now look what happens. So TaylorMade and Callaway Odyssey have been going back and forth with things for years. You know, you mentioned DJ's putter. TaylorMade have been trying to get DJ out of Scotty, you know, for years. And then finally he'd switch, be big news, then he'd switch back.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be good. You know, he's going back and forth. But you know, with TaylorMade and like white putters, you know, Odyssey then came out with white, they came out with Versa. You could get, you know, white was the predominant color versus black the predominant color, because you know, how can you don't want a company to own a particular color. Now we got Truvis, we got Pix, you know, they're a little bit back and forth. We've got the Spider, of course, and the Odyssey 10. Where I was like, when I saw an Odyssey 10 at a dress, I was like, oh, did they like change the shape of the Spider? Like, no, that's an Odyssey. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? You know, that was, it's that similar, but it's funny how the companies are like, no, that's not similar.
Yeah. What I do like is they take their own approach, especially with putters of this size. And as we had talked once again before the show, we kind of ran down the list of what makes certain putters that are of larger sizes unique from different manufacturers. Now, you're always going to have the answer style that is super limited in what you can do with it. Let's not pretend it all didn't come from one place. But then you have larger putters that create more freedom to do unique things, such as this triple track on the number seven. Then you have a company like Cleveland, who came out with a 2-1-3-5 concept, which is very much unique to them. You know, TaylorMade did some interesting technology in the Spider and pulled that information from somewhere else, which despite being somewhat similar in design is still unique to their concept. And then you see a little bit of that stuff kind of meshing, like Exo Concepts. And as you had mentioned previously, the 10 versus the X conveniently aligned. Can you think of any other ones?
Well, I mean, if you're you dig back in the argument and it's all, it all starts with ping, right? And it kind of evolved from there. So listen, you need, there's been plenty of great products in the golf industry that deserved a better fate than they received, but you have to do the whole package, right? You've got to tell the story, you've got to market it, and you have to be able to get it into people's hands. And, you know, look at Adam's Golf as an example. I mean, how many people were like, oh man, that's super hybrid. What a, or the peanut or something. They just loved them. And, you know, we're done. You know, if we understand that they got absorbed and the rest is kind of history. So, you know, things have to be, there's a lot of wheels that have to be put in motion. There's tons of examples of people copying and so forth. And changing up alignments, right? You went from two ball to Versa, completely different concept, you know? And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I've been putting with the, I wanted something going down the target line my entire life. Now I have to think perpendicularly. It just didn't work for me, you know?
Yeah.
It just wasn't my favorite thing. It did make me crave Oreos though.
You know, it's funny to me how we as players of the game we love focus on all this talk about recreations and copies and, you know, not being totally different. You see companies that haven't really propelled because they're different, you know, because it makes them unique, it almost holds them back. And I think of companies like Seymour, where if you go to a store and you putt with a Seymour, the closest thing you can do to get to an answer is their DB4. But their predominant value in their lineup is in their RST technology, which is very unique. So when you go down the line of putters, it's totally different from a visual perspective from another brand. And it's almost like we as golfers claim that we want unique and then we get it. And it's like, this is too unique. It's almost like these companies are obligated to find that happy medium between the two.
Yeah. I mean, believe it or not, I used to really like putting with an Odyssey Backstrike. I thought it felt great, honestly. And there was, I mean, if you want alignments, we got them. You know, that was like, we'll give you a foot of alignments on that. But their Seymour is a good one. But the M7, I think it's M7 Platinum, that now that they have with the plumber neck, as they call it, I say plumber's neck, but I don't think you could say whatever.
PN.
That
just be safe.
What's that?
PN, just be safe.
That still has RST technology. And that was one of the things that I always had trouble putting with the Seymour, because I never used something that was center shaft or similar in my life. But now you've got Lab, right, who has some wacky putters in a way. Definitely not, I should say, non-traditional shapes, just to not offend wacky putter fans. But they, if you putt well with them, then hey, that's what you putt well with. But yeah, Seymour has a lot. I mean, there's a lot of different options there with head shapes and so forth that I think people don't realize. I mean, I don't know if we mentioned it before, but aside from Tiger Woods Cameron, number one Cameron, the putter that's won the most money worldwide is Zach Johnson's Seymour. It's like 45 million or something like that. I forget what the number was.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe it's even more, but yeah, that's that. I mean, he's switched to a PXG.
That looks exactly like a Seymour. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. But if you look at it, that's the one, that's the second highest earning putter in the world for sure.
That's wow.
I mean, that's crazy to switch. It seems just so just wow. Surprising.
The stats man cometh. I like that information.
That's right.
And it's been fun to kind of chat about a company like Seymour, because as you mentioned, they have a new technology that clearly puts them closer to other companies. So I'm curious to see, especially for those listening, whether people are going out and trying these heads and are curious to try these heads, because you do close the gap. You don't have to make a big change to go try a Seymour now. You have something that has the benefits of RST, but is still very much in that plug and play reality where you don't have to make a big change.
Yeah, so. I always felt like the other, with some of them, with the straight in shaft, the putter head had to be kind of, was kind of felt like it was passing my hands at impact, but the plumber neck changes that. It's very, you know, it's just like, you're just putting, you know, you don't have to manipulate your stroke at all. So I do recommend trying it out.
So I think putter alignment pretty much hammered into the ground at this point. But Rob, there is one more thing I want to talk about before we end this episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a big one.
This is a goodie. You know, you can putt or you can go putting, right? That's okay.
Right? Okay. Is it?
And I don't know, but, you can golf, but can you go golfing? That's the question.
So we've got putt, putting, putter.
Yeah, putt, putting, putter.
Golf, golf, and golf. Yeah. So to set the stage for this, hopefully not terribly long conversation, I found out recently, and maybe I've been living under a rock, which is pretty remarkable considering the accessibility I've had to social golfers in general. Can I even say that anymore?
I don't know.
Apparently, you can't say specifically, I'm golfing today, or I'm going golfing. You must say, I'm going to play golf, or I'm playing golf today.
There's that argument out there.
That only serious golfers, only those who are serious about the sport, do not use the verb form.
That's correct. And I did some research, because I'm telling you, this research thing, it really works. I found something as far back on forum as 2008, which is ancient. That's basically, you know, when messages were traveling by pigeon and everything.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, can I say golfing?
Was it a fax? Was it a printed fax of someone being openly concerned with a USGA response?
Dot matrix microfiche. It had a lifespan. That those were out there. But yeah, people have been asking this question forever. And I have to tell you, like, you asked me, like, what is it? I don't want to go too far into this, like, before we started up today. And I don't think I care. I just don't think I care that if someone says either way, you know, this isn't the ketchup hill that I'm willing to die on, where you should not refrigerate ketchup. All right.
You just couldn't let an episode go by.
I had to.
Without pushing that narrative.
It's unnecessary, and it ruins things. But anyway.
So, as I mentioned before, I started a thread on THP about this because I was baffled finding out that people are so passionate about it.
You're so shocked you started it within like 5 minutes of finding out these news to you.
I went on there. I was like, are you aware of this? Like, you can't do that? And within, you know, an hour, there was over 30 replies of people not exactly agreeing with each other. But my favorite take, which is your take, is who cares?
I don't care. But I know that there are plenty of people. I know people who are, you know, PGA members and so forth, who are adamant about you can't say golfing. If you're a serious golfer, you can't say golfing. Golf is not a verb. I've seen other bloggers put things up that say definitively it is listed as a verb in Webster's, but they're wrong. I mean, it's like, all right. That was interesting to me.
So let me give you some samples and let's see what sounds weirdest, because the most common argument against it is you don't say I'm footballing or I'm basketballing. Okay, right. That's the biggest argument, is you don't say that.
Baseball. So, what's my favorite one that you mentioned earlier?
Oh yeah. Do you throw darts, or do you go pooling, or do you pooling. Play pool?
Pooling. I'm so crazy. I
go darting. So here's my samples. If football is the argument, can you say I golf? Most would argue yes. Can you say I football?
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that.
So should they be treated differently? Okay. So I golfed today. Does that sound okay?
Yes.
I footballed today.
Yeah. That's, I don't want to even know that.
If someone asks you, are you a golfer? Does that sound right?
That sounds good.
Can you say, are you a footballer?
I think that's, I think some people do say that, but I think it's about soccer.
I always thought you had footballing. I don't know. I think it's more like sarcasm that's built in.
Yes.
But then the other argument is there are so many different things like swimming, skiing, bowling. You're allowed to use that like flowing concept. Whereas golf, it is, I played golf. I did not go golfing.
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't think I really care if somebody tells me they're golfing today. Maybe it's because I want to wear one of those hats, like a good day golfing is better than a bad day at work or something, or bad day golfing is better than a good day at work.
I'm going to be honest with you, Rob. I kind of want to start pushing this. I want to be that dude who corrects everyone. Says, we're not golfing, bro. We're playing golf.
Oh, you want to just do it?
I want to be that guy.
You're back in like college psych course. Is that what's happening?
I'm into it, man. If you told me you have two choices, you can no longer say I'm golfing or they're going to allow shorts on the PGA tour. I'm going to say screw saying golfing.
So if golf isn't a verb, if golf is not a verb, how come you can say golf your ball, man, go golf that ball.
Like I think you say that in inaccuracy, but it sounds right. Really golfed your ball.
That's a verb right there.
Yeah. So
you need a verb in a sentence. I do know that much.
I do think that sounds a little bit more weird than I went golfing today. I golfed my ball.
Yeah. That's said more in a buddy conversation than a statement to your family or something. That's what you're going at. But how about this? How about are you a golfer, but are you a golf player? Another one. I'm a golf player now.
I'm a golf per
all weekend. I'm a golf
thing. Player. I'm a golf guy.
Yeah,
I am a golf guy. Actually, I'm good with that. I'm a golf guy,
dude. I'm gonna put this to bed. All right. So the easiest thing, I went right to Wikipedia, right to the source, which Michael Scott has taught us. It's everything's true.
Is Michael Scott or Michael Scarn?
No, Michael Scott. Has taught us. So here we go. Wikipedia quotes. That's what you all came here for. That's what you all going to get. The oldest surviving rules of golf were written in 1744 for the Company of Gentlemen Golfers, later renamed blah, 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 in Edinburgh, right? Which their articles and laws in playing at golf, that's a new wrinkle, right? Now preserved in the National Library of Scotland. Century later, there was the first golfing society in the world.
They said golfing society?
Yes, it's called Royal Burgess Golfing Society of Edinburgh. And I might be saying that wrong, so I apologize. It is a Scottish golf club which holds claim as the oldest golfing society in the world, with references to being instituted in 1735, dating from 1834.
So I have a critical question here.
Okay.
Would you consider them to be the first people to publicize the incorrect way of saying it, or the first group to validate the way of saying it?
Oh boy, that's a hell of a...
If they had Twitter in the 1700s, would these staunch golf players get after them?
Well, maybe you can ask one of their notable members, which include Jack Nicklaus and Bernard Gallagher, alongside a host of royals, aristocrats, and socialites.
What a funny conversation, man. I want to know, once again, from our listeners, are you aware that saying I'm going golfing is impolite and inaccurate?
Maybe this turned around the time where people decided that Jack Nicklaus didn't have 20 majors anymore or something like that because of the USAMs.
What do you think is more appropriate, Rob? Playing out of a fairway bunker or using the term I am golfing?
What's more appropriate?
if you had to give up one.
Well, if you play like me, you have to play fairway bunkers, unfortunately.
Fairway divot. Did I say fairway bunker? Fairway divot.
You did say bunker.
Oh god, I'm losing it.
I would say I would get rid of golfing if it meant I could remove my ball from a divot. Yeah, lift clean and play is fair. I would do that. But I actually had to think about when we were thinking about this topic, like, do I say golfing? No, I say I'm going golfing. I say it all the time. I'm going golfing this week. I'm going golf Saturday. So I don't care. I don't care if someone uses a verb. It's like, whatever, dude.
So you're saying this is a glass shattering moment for you. Now, every time you say it, you're going to get one of those rubber bands and hit yourself with it.
Yeah. You know what I hate? Now I have to think about it.
That you put that evil in my mind.
It's the word. It's like, I'm playing putt. I'm going to play putt. Like, is that going to play mini putt?
I'm going to use my putter on the putting green. Oh, I can't even say that.
Yeah. When do you use ING?
The green that you may putt on.
Are gerunds not allowed now? This is crazy. I don't even know what to do.
I think we're lost in translation here.
But overall, we agree, right?
I don't know. I think I'm going to
know.
Like a new pair of shoes, I'm going to try it on and see how it feels.
Wow. That's
I'm going to parade around my golf club, not my golfing club. I'm going to parade around my golf club and see how offended I can make people by correcting their golfing vernacular.
Well, you're never going to get into the Royal Burgess Golfing Society that way.
I've never heard of that, just like I've never heard of this.
Very prestigious.
It clearly is.
It's in Wikipedia.
Oh man, Rob, I think we got to stop, buddy.
I think we're good this week. I've got a lot to think about, ponder.
Like putting your ketchup in your fridge. Yes, I know.
Yeah, ketchup fridge. I got to look at sight lines on putters. I have to decide whether I'm going to put my Bettinardi wedges in play this week because I found out they were delivered with two different shafts.
Oh boy!
Not just
flex. Let's take that. Put it on ice, man. We're talking about that next week. 100%. All
right, we'll see what happens because I'm going to try them.
All right. Also, you need to think about buying a golf speaker, but. For those who are listening, please keep in mind we have other podcasts on the THP Radio Network. Our good friend Adam at Golf Unfiltered and the THP Range Days, which is part Canada and part J-Man experience, which I think you'll really enjoy talking about irons and the differences in the technology that's built into them. Once again, we do have an awesome prize pack that is coming to our membership and to those who listen and follow along. Rob, do you want to remind them how to do that one more time before we go?
Yeah, I'll try. Instagram, tag a friend and follow us, Off Course THP. And on Twitter, we want you to retweet this podcast, please, and also follow us. Again, it's Off Course THP.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network. Your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.